I grew up in a family where musical theater functioned as Torah. I mean, I think the men in my family probably are much more familiar with the score of Guys and Dolls than the Shabbat liturgy. And so when I think of, for me, pieces of musical theater Torah that have had the most profound impact on my life as a queer person, I'm probably not alone in thinking about Fun Home, which is a musical based on a lesbian cartoonist, Alison Bechdel's autobiography. And there is a moment called the Ring of Keys moment, where little Allison is about 10 years old, and she sees this butch delivery woman come into this diner who has short hair and combat boots and a carabiner, a ring of keys on her belt, and it completely explodes for her the notion of what gender presentation could look like. If we think about Torah, that's like Moses and the burning bush moment, where, you know, you get this vision, this call that puts your life in a totally different direction. And so Ring of Keys has become a shorthand for seeing someone who you can recognize a part of yourself that you didn't know you were missing, that points you in a new direction for what queerness can look like. And if I'm being honest, the people who have opened up for me the idea of what it means to be queer and Jewish and proud, I mean, there have been elders, obviously, but the people who've had been my most profound role models have been my students. So when I was a kid, I really didn't fit in Hebrew school. We didn't have language in the late 90s for things like queer and neurodivergent. I just knew I was a lot and didn't fit in with the clicky girls in my Hebrew school, and then the boys would make fun of me and throw paper balls down my shirt. There's this one kid who would say, "Hey Lisa, you're pretty ugly." And so, like a lot of queer neurodivergent kids who don't know that they are, I got along much better with my teachers, and I loved davening, I loved all of that. But after my bi mitzvah, there really weren't places for me to fit in the Jewish community. And because theater was, you know, a much more part of my religious tradition, that's what I gravitated toward after theater. And really, musical theater is Torah in my dad's family. I mean, when I think of like Tzadi Kim, like Jewish, elders, prophets in my family. I mean, I was really raised on a diet of Mel Brooks and Jackie Mason and, let's not talk about Woody Allen. I was basically socialized like a Jewish man, because there hadn't been a girl born in my dad's family for 60 years. So he just like didn't know what to do with a girl. And so, you know, so I think that also made it hard for me to fit in the Jewish world around me. But, you know, in theater, you can be a little extra. You can be a little weird. But even in the theater, there was also parts that didn't fit, because even though like I was socialized guy, musical theater guy, I was still body girl. And as I started going into puberty and started auditioning, the roles for women in musical theater suck. Especially a lot of the stuff written by Jewish men. The, you know, the roles for women, you can either be a soprano and an ingenue and hot and sexy, or you're like an unfuckable side character who's a joke. And there was lots of gay male representation around, but I also feel like I got this message that in order to be gay, you had to be fabulous. You had to be a triple threat. You had to be, like, completely unflappable. And I was just too tender to function. And so I got the message. And even though I persisted in theater, I have 2 degrees in it, I never felt like I fit. And even when I became a writer, I had gotten the message that no one wanted to plays about people like me. You know, one of my favorite Jewish screenwriters, Nora Ephron, she cast Meg Ryan to deliver all of her very Jewish dialogue. But then, as I finished grad school and moved to New York, the culture started to change a little. You had musicals like Fun Home. You have Yiddish lesbians on Broadway in Indecent. You have shows like Transparent and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend that allow Jewish people of all different genders, shapes, personalities to be sexy and sad and musical and just, and it felt like I was allowed to express a full spectrum of experience. And not just pop culture. There were organizations for queer youth like Keshet. I started studying with Svara, which is a queer yeshiva. There's an anthology called A Rainbow Thread that came out, which is a collection of queer Jewish texts from the last 2,000 years. And, you know, all as I started to rebuild my own Jewish learning identity, I started to realize I wanted to give back. So I became a Jewish educator. I started teaching Hebrew school. And, you know, everyone who is an educator, we all are doing reparative work. We're all trying to be the role model that we wish we would have had. But when I first got to the Reform Synagogue in Brooklyn, these kids were way ahead of me. I remember I had this a non-binary second grader who just had no problem correcting anyone who forgot their pronouns. I had fifth graders who would regularly announce like new names. And these kids were, I mean, you know, sometimes kids made fun of each other for other reasons, but they weren't made fun of for that. Or the kids that really blew my mind, when I really think of like the Ring of Keys moments, were the high schoolers. There was this kid who I think his name was Ruby, and he was assigned female at birth but used he/him pronouns, and one day he came in just wearing this like witchy maxi dress, and I was like, is that allowed? Are you allowed to use he/him pronouns and wear dresses? Like, I sometimes I still wonder if I'm androgynous enough to be allowed to be non-binary. Or and then there was this one kid who came in one day with like earplugs in his ears with the Aveda logo on them. And so I was an Aveda super fan in fifth grade, and that did not endear me to my peers in Hebrew school. And so the fact that a kid could be popular and, you know, be a gay musical theater fan and proclaim his love of Aveda in Hebrew school. Like, what the fuck? And so then a couple years later, I got a job here in Baltimore at University of Maryland, Baltimore County, Hillel. And I learned that a lot of our students were Orthodox students from Pikesville. And so I thought, okay, you know, I'm going to be the cool New Yorker who can, you know, share the queer, the good gay news with, you know, these kids who've been sheltered. And nope, they are also way ahead of me. The kids who, I have these students who are, you know, use they, them pronouns, don't eat kidney oat on Passover, you know, wear corsets for Shabbat and play D&D on Shabbos afternoon, and, you know, also speak better Hebrew than me and have learned, like, more Talmud than I could ever imagine. And sometimes it gives me a little bit of imposter syndrome, a little bit. But it's also really amazing because, you know, I think when you're a kid and you're, you know, don't really feel like you fit, you also don't feel like you have anything to offer. And, you know, so we think of the idea of Le Dor Vador, and it's usually thought of as this linear vertical passage from, like, you know, elders to the young, this, like, this linear chain, top-down chain of being. But, you know, I feel like time for Jews and for queer people is just different. You know, it's, I think, for me at least, it's, you know, when I think of legacy and learning and passing on and being mentored, being both a mentor and being mentored by the same people, it's more like a ring of keys, if you will. And each of us has the profound ability to unlock portals to different paths of the queer Jewish past and future. And the future looks pretty darn gay to me. Yeah.